It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper? A woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver. I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions 18+. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's no wonder that Prince Charles decided to go to Leeds Library to have a look at some old books rather than come here, when all I've got is, you know, my laptop and a microphone.
All the royalties in here, you don't need to worry about.
There are people waiting outside for hours in Leeds in the cold. There's nothing to do in Leeds. And their library's not got a bingo hall and stuff next to it. No. So the people in Dewsbury, obviously, massive.
The art gallery,
aren't they? Art schmart. Not to talk about that. We're talking about rugby league and the World Cup, which is coming towards its end, which is a bit sad. Phil Kaplan. This is a panel with Phil Kaplan, so Phil, over to you. That's what he said on the Kirklees Council. Don't know I'm here. Well,
welcome to the home of Eddie Waring.
There you go. There. Anyone else?
Some local celebrities.
Freddy Cummings, if you...
He is on his way. He's texting. He's on his way. He's royalty around here.
The Burgesses. Yes, I'd like to point out, I'm not from Dewsbury. I'm from Batley, which could be the other end of the world, couldn't it?
Why are we not in Batley Library? Because we've got the coach of Batley here. It's all Craig Lingard. I mean, any Batley fans in? No. Any Dewsbury fans in?
It's going to be a tough audience.
There's only one Dewsbury fan in as well. So that's which everyone support. What's going on? Not going to be Leeds fans, are they?
Yeah.
No.
Oh.
They're everywhere.
Everywhere. How are you, Craig?
I'm very well, thank you, yeah. Just had 4 days in Portugal golfing, so come back to this weather.
I thought it was gleaming.
Yeah.
Ian Label, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. I'm going to Spain golfing in 2 weeks. What are you going to?
I'm going to Australia for Christmas, I hope so. No, golf. Just swimming.
Do a golf podcast. How are you, John?
I'm good. Just to say, this is not Simone Blue. So Phil's wearing Simone Blue for Saturday, I think. But yeah, this is not.
Well, if you were Simone, you wouldn't be speaking to us, would you? Because
no, I'd be.
Oh, no, are they speaking now? Or are they banned again?
Well, I think the power of Andrew Voss has shamed them into speaking. Yeah, helps promote the World Cup that you want to be big and best.
Yeah, but John Wilkins says Joseph Powell shouldn't be banned.
Well, we're just talking, me and Ian, because the tribunal will be on tonight. We're not sure what time or where, but it was a fairly blatant elbow to the throat of David Fifita, so seems like this World Cup most things are okay, though.
It has seemed to have been that way, apart from if you're the Brazilian captain was banned, and they weren't happy, were they? But she'll be back tomorrow for Brazil versus Canada.
Looking forward to it. In fact, every game that we've got left has got something on it. There's a story around it. And I think a lot of the talking points in the early part of the tournament were blowout scorelines, which is never something you should be surprised at in any World Cup of any sport. But all the great stories were in the group stages, and all the great games are in the knockout stages. So I think it's followed a really logical pattern. And the fact that the women's group stages end over the next 2 days, the wheelchair one ends just after that, and then we're already into the men's knockout stage. I just think it's got a momentum of its own.
Momentum. Where's Rod Studd winning him? Just think about this. The people in Warrington, they had the Civvy Town versus the Sippy Town, was it? Get it right? As we used to just call them, hackers. Well, it was much easier in the olden days. And in York, the entertainment there on Thursday for the good people of York is us. I mean, that's a bit disappointing for them, isn't it? We could do a dance if we've got a good... What's the Leeds cultural dance thing?
I'm sorry, you said Leeds and cultural in the same...
I mean, obviously in Batley, it's the conga, you know, because we've seen Black Lace do it on that video. Have you been watching much of the World Cup in Portugal?
Yeah, we watched every game. Yeah, we managed to find plenty of sports bars over there that quite accommodating putting the games on, so we managed to get every game over there, so it's passed a bit of time in the evening.
What have you enjoyed of the past week or so?
I just think that, as Phil says, I think it's building momentum now. And I suppose for me, the shock for me is probably how uninspiring New Zealand have been. And for me, they, at the start of the tournament, they were my tips to win it, but unless they get a considerable amount better than they have been in the last, well, certainly in the semi-final, then they'll be going home. So that's been my shock. I've been pleasantly surprised at how clinical England have been as well, and how professional England have been in their performances. And it's been good to see, I suppose, some players that have taken a bit of flack, a bit of stick this season for their form. So playing under a coach that they want to play under, and it certainly helps.
I think it's great, because, you know, not going to not admit that before the tournament thing, George Williams, what's he doing in the squad? Warrington have been rubbish, and he goes out there and he plays as if he was, you know, George Williams of the past.
Yeah, I think it's trusted by Sean Wayne. I think he knows what's expected of him from Sean Wayne, and he can go out there and deliver it, and you can tell that he's playing with a confidence on him, with maybe a coach that believes in what he can do and trusts him to be able to do what he can do. It doesn't seem to be as structured as maybe what it is at Warrington. He seems to have a lot freer rein to go out and do what George Williams wants to do. So I think that pressure's taken off, and you can tell that you remove the shackles from him, he's out there and plays really well.
Is it going too well for England? It's all a bit too good at the minute.
Well, I suppose it's the converse argument with New Zealand, isn't it? You know, you expect New Zealand to get better, so do you expect England to get a little bit worse? I'd certainly expect England to get to the final the way they performed so far. And I think if that would have happened at the start of the tournament, we'd probably consider it as a success. But as they've been going so well as they have done now, I think it's gone from how are England going to do to can England win this? And I think they certainly can the way they've played so far.
Obviously, we know New Zealand are flying out after the game on Friday, because that's the big news story today. And if the Tongan fans are still here, can we ship them down to the Emirates? Reverse the flag. It'll be all right. They can support. Father Christmas must be around. Get him down there. Ian, what's your highlight been so far?
You mentioned it there, the Tongan fans, I think. They've certainly had a touch of colour. I would love to have seen them beat Samoa, just for the fact that we'd have all those fans down in London. They certainly had a touch of colour, don't they? A bit of excitement. I was in Auckland in 2017 when there were about 30,000 of them. I don't know where they all came from, but they seem to follow them all around the world, don't they? So that's been the highlight for me, and seeing all the different, all the Lebanese fans came out. There must have been a couple of hundred Lebanese fans watching their country, and it's got a few Greeks, so you know it's been a true World Cup in that sense, isn't it? Getting all the minnows following them.
John, your highlight? Obviously, Australia just battering everyone apart from in wheelchair.
I think Greece has probably been my highlight. I think the Greek story of just getting to the World Cup, qualifying when the sport's banned in their country, all their sacrifices, and how they performed. Obviously, the three big losses, but I think they competed in every game, and what that means to them, you could really see. They had more domestic players than any other country. Even though obviously a heavy heritage base, but the way that they put all that together, I think was really impressive. But there's been a lot of highlights. I think the Tonga Papua New Guinea game in the group stages was fantastic. There's been a lot of great games. The quarterfinals on Sunday and Saturday night, the best two games so far. And I think, as Phil said, it really is building. There's two massive semi-finals. Obviously, a lot of women's and wheelchair games to come as well, but I think we're set for a massive weekend and a massive final at Old Trafford.
I think we've been very lucky, those of us who've been following it, because, again, the first part of the tournament is stories. stories that you never normally get. So spending time watching, you know, the Brazilian women and their enthusiasm, which, you know, we're jaundiced because we've done this for years and it all, you know, the fixtures are out, we're playing everybody 18 times again. It's a cycle. And when people break it, it's really refreshing. So, you know, you were saying the Jamaican guys have been fantastic. Just to interview them and talk to them about what it means. Now you're getting to the end where we're talking about performance. But I just think the great thing for those who've followed rugby league for a long time is these different cultures that are coming and playing. What have we got in common with Papua New Guineans that are on the terraces at the Totally Wicked Stadium, all made up in headdresses and body paint? We all love rugby league. And I think that has been great. And whilst people might want to talk about attendances and margins, it's not actually about that.
We want to see people at Mount Pleasant and Tetley Stadium, is it called these days? We'll just call it Ram Stadium. Dressed up like the Papua New Guineans. That's what we want. Full, almost naked people in paint. No.
Sounds like a Sunday night from my youth.
Shouldn't forget the Fijians as well. You talk about the highlights. I mean, the Fijian hymns.
Yeah.
Will live with me for a long time. I don't know about anybody else, but every time they play for 2 days after, I'm humming Hallelujah in my head. I can't get it out of my head. It's fantastic.
We found the same with the Irish national anthem as well. Yeah. You're wandering around going shoulder to shoulder. What am I doing that for? Because I just heard the Irish anthem. Yeah. It's brilliant.
You're trying to qualify for Ireland for the next World Cup.
We're all eligible for somebody.
So it's only 3 years away.
And that's the other joy. That all of the... I'm not fortunate again last night to be with the American wheelchair team. You know, only the second game that they've ever played. They're talking in a way that their enthusiasm is infectious, and that's what we had when we first came into the sport. You know, they want to go home and they want to create a domestic league. And the exciting thing for them, as it is with Brazil and their women, is they know they're back in 3 years' time. They can make a difference quite quickly. It's been brilliant.
Qualifying will start soon, won't it?
But for the women and the wheelchair, they're in. They know they're in. Yeah.
But for the men,
it starts. Yeah.
Any low points? Got to get some negative. Because you're negative journalist.
No. I think like any tournament, there's always ups and downs. I mean, I think the debate about ticket prices has been interesting. And I can understand in part, but I think there are a lot of factors involved with that. I mean, I think there's been a culture of discounted tickets in this country for years.
I'm still waiting for the tickets for £1 if I'm an NHS worker for Friday. You know, even though I'm not, I'm just going to get them anyway.
Well, somebody told me, it might have been Phil, actually, or someone else, that I think there was 20,000 NHS tickets available, to, and only a few thousand have been actually taken up, and they're free. So I think the attendances... Some of the attendances have been disappointing. Other ones, I think they've been as expected. But I think also they're built. And if you look at the England games have been particularly well attended. And I think hopefully we get massive attendances this weekend and for Old Trafford. But I mean, there's been a lot of high points. I mean, you never get everything right. But I think the players have conducted themselves really well. And the coaches have pretty much... you know, particularly, you know, like Michael Checker on Friday night, he was fantastic. You know, I think he left he had a flight at 4 a.m. to get down to London to coach Argentina to beat England in rugby union on Sunday. But he was talking for over 20 minutes about, you know, the experience and what it meant to him and about the success of the World Cup and why we have to persist with this format. So there's been a lot of high points.
That's quite good of him to sit there and talk to people for a while. There's not if he coached us.
Yeah, and Mel Meninga was the same. You know, I think there was a great Phil was there. There was a great and Ian was there. It's a great point where one of the Australian print journalists tried to get Mel Meninga to say he was offended because New Zealand were the number ranked team, and he flatly refused to give him his back page headline. But that'll be a great game. You know, New Zealand. I agree with Greg. I think New Zealand have been. They were my tip before the tournament to win it, and they've been disappointing. When you look at that team on paper, they should be the best in the world, but they have been disappointing. Fiji were quite unlucky not to win that game, but I think in an 80 minutes, you know, any of those players could star in Ellen Road and beat the Kangaroos. So, yeah, lots to look forward to still.
Bad news for fans of Phil. I've cut him off on the screen because Francis Cummings is
here. Oh, mother.
Mick Stillham. Francis, how are you?
I'm very good.
Very good now, Mia.
Enjoying the World Cup more than the traffic.
If you can't get to run your car through everybody else's traffic as the virtual mayor of Dewsbury, I don't know who can.
Dewsbury's not the problem. It was Doncaster and the A1, and the A1 is a thing of itself, isn't it? So, yeah, it's a bit of a trek.
Oh, Carl Hall's not watching me getting upset now. Did he give those chains back? I saw Claire Balding with them on the other day. On the telly. Kate Middleton. Princess of Wales. You have a meeting.
And I'm enjoying the World Cup.
You're enjoying the World Cup.
I'm really enjoying it. Loving the wheelchair. I just think it's outstanding. The BBC Two, I just think it's the best thing I've seen in a long time. Just the skills and it's rugby league as well, isn't it? It's not murder ball. It's not, you know, the stuff we saw in the Paralympics, which probably rugby union tried to claim. It's just murder ball. It's not even rugby, but that is brilliant. I think with the girls, I think it's a masterstroke. Not often do we talk our game up and think we've got things right, and you might think, you know, people point to attendances and prices and things like that, but having the men's, the women's, the wheelchair, and the PDRL in together, I think it's been a masterstroke. I think it shows what we are as gaming, it's embracing, and we're punching miles above our weight.
Yeah, I just had to highlight, I think the BBC coverage has been fantastic, and have all those games live on TV, you can't, that's priceless, that kind of mainstream coverage that rugby league doesn't get in England.
Moving University Challenge.
And the gardening. I don't know. He's got 150,000 points.
There were some letters and points of view. I just think the timing of it and everything, I just think, and I was just like, look, and I'm not on social media, but I can see bits and bats when I won. And I was exactly like what people there, just blown away by it. I mean, generally, the game of rugby league is we take for granted more often than not, don't we? And you forget that, but I've been blown away with everything. I think the things around it, especially the weekend, the Samoa and all that. I love the Fiji singing. I just think it's just so rich in just, you know, where it's from and what they bring to it. And I think I'm enjoying that as much as what's happening on the field.
You must be pleased that when you played international rugby league for Great Britain and England, and not Ireland because they wouldn't have done this, but in the olden days when we've seen the black and white footage of Great Britain teams on tour doing some kind of weird hacker thing, you must be glad you didn't have to do that. We don't look foolish.
Well, yeah, it's not in our culture, it's certainly not in mine, and it's a bit, probably almost like close to dancing, and if it was about dancing, I certainly wouldn't be happy with hacker.
Lee Raptor's dancing with Samoa. He's thrown himself into it.
Well, then fair play to him.
Honorary Samoan Lee Radford. I've heard the tales. Did you make any royalty in your illustrious playing career? Everyone was excited by seeing.
I've got a story actually, and it's good. You know, William Poaching's watching. We were laughing about this not that long ago. When it was, what was it? Was it a Silver Jubilee? There was a big thing at Temple Newsham at the time. There was Leeds captain. There were about five or six players who went up, and there was all kinds of, I think, Mel B, Belinda Carlisle, all that. There was a few, remember that? Anyway, the Queen was coming. So I'm in a great position here. And there's all these Aussies, so there's all, and Kiwis. So there's Willie, it was a Matt Adamson, Tony Carroll, people like that. So they're all, you know, we joke about, you know, your queen and all that. It's not like
your queen, John.
Yeah, all this.
Your king now.
Anyway, she's now here. I can see her, and I'm in real good position. Within a few seconds, they're all in front of me. So my joke was, within a minute, they're all crying and bowing and all this, and I'm at the back of the group trying to get in. So yeah, of course I met her. I didn't speak to her, but I waved to her. I ended up speaking to Philip after as he came past. When everyone else was watching the queen. Not one of the realising you stood there. So yeah, that's the closest we got to any altar.
I don't think the World Cup's been so exciting. You fancy playing the wheelchair game? We'll get you down.
I look at it and think, hey, that passing bit, but the collisions. I have to have an helmet. I have to have everything on there. I'd love to have a go at it. I really would. But there's not many parts of my body actually work properly now. So in my mind, I know where I want to be. I'm not sure my legs go in that direction, so moving wheels to get me there, I'm not sure. But I think it's another option of, you can continue playing the game, can't you? A version of the game when most of your body parts don't work anymore.
I've actually played it once. When I said played it, I went down and attended and sat in a chair and just basically rolled around this sports orbit because I couldn't. Bit like patting your head and rubbing your stomach, you've got to do different things at the same time, and it's the coordination side of it is really difficult. And then there's a ball there that you're trying to move, and you're looking around where everybody else is. And like I said, I just ended up rolling around this sport, so I'll try to control the wheelchair.
Yeah, didn't you buy JJB saying on the telly, he was going around in circles, he had the ball in one hand and steering with the other, and he couldn't work out where he was going around in circles. But he's an intelligent man, he's got an MBE now, is it MBE?
I think the important thing about wheelchair though, and women's to a lesser extent, is that it doesn't have to follow the template of the men's game. So we spent about 128 years trying to evolve the running game, and with very limited success. There's always something to hold that back, but there's a freshness about the wheelchair in the women's game whereby, you know, if you're sitting watching this in Aberdeen and you want to form a team, and you might want to link it to community sports hall or whatever, there's a way of starting rugby league that almost gives us a template to then do men's on the back of it. And I think if you were to say to a television station at the moment who isn't maybe covering rugby league or has just come across the wheelchair in the last 2 or 3 weeks, if we could give you something as quality as this every week, so there was a wheelchair super league and it was a national competition, would you give us some money to film it? I think they would. So I don't know what the powers would be. We'll be sitting down after the World Cup and deciding what its legacy is. But one of the things should be to divert some funds into wheelchair to sell the rest of the sport. I think it's almost overtaken the traditional way we try and expand it. If you're in Plymouth, for example, and you're Plymouth Argyle Football Club and you want to have a wheelchair rugby league team playing in a wheelchair super league, there's no reason why you shouldn't put the colours of that football team on. Take the name for the southwest of England, you know, play Wigan Warriors or Leeds Rhinos or Catalan Dragons or whatever it might be. Sell the sport that way, because when people get into the wheelchair, and it's exactly what Franny was saying, it's rugby league. That you watch it for a certain amount of time and marvel at the collisions, but then you're watching going, well, it's a third tackle, who's moving for the fourth, and how are they going to get this to the other side, and why is they just loop round, and all of that actually, it gets you into saying, well, I watch a bit of the running rugby as well. I think it's been the biggest success of all.
It links a little bit, Phil. I did a bursary report about 2011. It got thrown in some kind of, probably in the bin.
We mention it on here every so often.
And I basically talked about the versions of the game and looking at touch. Touches would be a massive thing because a lot of the top athletes get picked up by football. Football's taking over everything. It's just getting bigger and bigger. But they can play touch, anyone, mix, you know, whatever. Everyone can play touch and look at a version on TV and say, oh, I play that. Well, you might not play exactly what that is, but it's rugby league. It's six tackles. It's advancing the ball. It's passing. There's not the collision, but it's a way in, and that's the way it's. And there's other ways. We've opened a door, I think, with the wheelchair. It needs to be, and we need to step through it properly to get all the variations of the game. I remember starting a touch competition around here, actually, and it ended up becoming massive. But some people wouldn't ref it because, oh, I don't ref that. And it's like, why? It's rugby league. It's it's different. Yeah, it is different, but it's rugby league. It's just a different version that allows older people, as they were then, if we were over 35, to carry on playing a version of the game that allows you to go to work the day after.
I've spoken before on the podcast, and I think it's such a missed opportunity when you... You know, when I moved to England, when I first lived in London, there was a lot of anti-Badin competitions, but in the north, it hardly exists. And you look at Australia and New Zealand, everyone plays men, women in their 50s, 60s, you know. And
it's all on day.
You basically have...
Their foot out.
Yeah, well, now there's the NRL. They televise games, and you've got your Ryan Pappenhausens, who's played touch for Australia and then gone on to make the NRL. Benji Marshall was another. I mean, it's just a skill-based game without the physicality, so you don't have to be...
And I think more so introduce it to children and getting it in early because, you know, it's bizarre. You run as hard as you can into all them people over there. That's what you're telling your children. Doesn't make any sense. Now there's a level to get to that, but there's a few steps, and we just need lots more people doing it. That's the thing, because we've seen what a great game, and all these different variations. It's still the same game. It just happens to be some people are sat in wheelchairs, smashing it, the hell out of each other. Others aren't. Others can play touch. And
I think that's the thing for a club like Batley, which you've spoken about and written about before. That how do you extend your supporter base? That what you're doing in the men's running game, you're probably almost at your limit of achievement because you are the best part-time team in the sport. But if you had a wheelchair team carrying those colours and a women's team and a PDRL team and an LDRL team, that's how you initially build the club.
Yeah, that's got to be the next step. Not only for clubs like us, but for, I think, the rugby league in general. And just to add another version on top of that, so you could have your junior section, you've got your full contact first team, and then you could have your touch, your wheelchair and your women's, and then your PDRL. But you can also have the walking rugby as well, for the older which we do as well. So there's an avenue open there to get whatever age you are, whatever level of ability you are, whatever physical fitness you are, there's an avenue there to be involved in some sort of sport at your club. So you don't have to be between the age of 20, 35 and be the strongest, fittest, fastest. You can be 55-year-old and still be representing your club or taking part in the sport at your club. And I think as a group and as a sport, I think we need to do that. And I think that'll be what will form part of the IMG proposals. Unless you have got this, and this, then you're not going to be considered for Tier A, Tier B, or Tier C. And I think you've got to be harsh at times. And I think certainly clubs like us, we're very, very limited resources. That's what we need to do. We need to look outside the box. And yeah, it's going to be difficult, but how do we generate any more money?
But I think the limited resources is interesting because it should be done through the foundation. Because I think there are companies out there that are looking at things like wheelchair that would never normally get involved with rugby league. If I'm, let's say, a legal firm or a financial firm, and I don't particularly fully understand the cultural nuances of the men's running game, but I want my name on that England wheelchair team that may well win the World Cup, I'd be ringing up the RFL now saying, my £100,000 is here, what do I get for it? And I think that, even clubs like Batley will have businesses that wouldn't normally come to rugby league that will say, I want to finance your foundation and I want to see my company associated with the good that you're doing in the community. So I think it does open new financial avenues. It's not a question of taking the existing amount of money and spreading the jam even thinner. It gives you an avenue to get new money into the club.
Brian asked a question earlier in reference to Steve Mascord's article today. We've now got controversy in wheelchair rugby, which is brilliant. It's only taken a week.
Steve's fault. Blame Steve.
Is it Steve's fault?
I led him down the path.
All right.
I thought it was going to be about Scotland time wasting, which I thought was brilliant. A great way of limiting the score against the French. But without having Steve's article in front of me, one of the French players is disabled and can't rip the tags off a player. So in the first game against Wales, the referees made a decision to adapt the rules slightly.
I think in the previous World Cup he was allowed to make a touch as opposed to a full tag because he is disabled, but then they've decided not to allow that rule in the next game. It's
convention rather than rule.
Yes. So it's a new sport.
Historically, and bearing in mind the French drew up the rules in the first place, they're now complaining about the rules that were drawn. They're trying to get an advantage for the final, which is great because now we've got controversy in the wheelchair game. It's absolutely fantastic. Because if England do play France, there are some fantastic narratives that can be written. Not least Seb Bechara, who plays his club rugby in France, but wants to get under the skin of all of those players he plays with because he's an England international. So they've got a player called Jonathan Hivernat, who is one of the fastest. He's the Nathan Collins of French rugby league. But he has a disability in his hands whereby he can't rip off a tag. Conventionally, including in the last World Cup, which England were robbed of, he has been allowed to touch the tag but not pull it off. And they're now saying because that isn't written in the rules, even though it was a convention in the first game because the referee of that first game allowed it because it had happened in precedent in the past, because it's now not in the rules, if he plays, he can't defend in the traditional manner. And the French have complained. saying that he couldn't play in the final against England because you couldn't play with only four defenders, to which the answer is good. Let's create some rivalry.
It's an interesting question, though, it's because it is anyone can play it.
Yeah.
But there are obviously a lot of players with disabilities, so is it a sport for people who are disabled?
Yes, but it needs writing in the rules. Yeah, and as something evolves, like PDRL, which had to go through a whole classification system, the quicker it evolves, the more you've got to make... I mean, the French quite rightly came up with two very good examples of where the adaptation of the wheelchair rules has been made on the base of the running game and not what fixed the wheelchair game. The HIA test, the first one you've got to do is to walk along a white line, which, of course, if you're in a wheelchair, is relatively difficult. The other thing is captain's runs. They made a really good point that disabled people tend to need longer to warm up because they're in a chair. To get their bodies to the point where they're playing at maximum speed is longer than the 45 minutes that you need for each captain's run. And the captain's run is also 45 minutes because of potential weather implications. And they're saying it doesn't normally happen in a sports hub. So you do have to make sure that the rules as written relate to the game as played. And there is that slight imbalance, to which the French have a point. But they're using this particular one of pulling off a tag as an indication as to how the game is already stacked up against them. Great.
The defending championship just won 156.
Great. No. Brilliant. Controversy. We love it.
Well, that's great, Chris. You know, there have been controversies in the women's game that have been shied away from. We just don't talk about for whatever reason. Craig mentioned IMG. Ian, you've seen plenty of reports and plans for the future. How confident are you that we can grow the game going forward? Whatever IMG come up with or whatever, who else comes up with this as a platform, how confident are you that we can do that?
Well, something's got to change, hasn't it? And I've thought for a long time it needs somebody from the outside coming in with a fresh pair of eyes, not tainted by what's gone on in the past and influenced by their own club interests. They need just to take a fresh look at the whole game. And people, IMG have got such a good reputation that I think it's a win-win situation. That, so far, we don't really know what their plans are, do we? We've seen a rough sketch. And a lot of it has been picked from ideas of the past. So I'm a bit disappointed so far that them coming out with anything particularly revolutionary. I'm hoping that we might see a little bit more of that when we get to the finer detail. But so far, so good. We need a shake-up, don't we? Rugby League have gone as far as they can. They've basically put their hands up and said, we can't take this any further. We need some help, which is great. If they can see that, and now it's up to the clubs to give IMG the backing that they need.
John, do you think it'll happen? No self-interest.
Well, I hope it does. I agree with Ian. Something needed to change. I think there needs to be fresh leadership and new eyes. But I think some of it is partly down to people actually involved in the game and attitudes and mindsets. I'm not sure how you change those. Because there are people who think they're doing the right thing, and you know, but won't want to change and will refuse to change. And I think we've seen that over the different.
I was crossing the street when I met the love of my life. I chased after her. Nothing would stand in my way. Not the dog walker, nor the hot dog vendor. Finally reaching her, I asked, "What do you call that amazing smell?"
It's Gain Flings.
Gain Flings. My love had a name, but more importantly, it had a scent.
Fall in love with Gain Flings. Seriously good scent.
Try Gain Flings today with special savings at Family Dollar.
Examples in the last few decades. But you do definitely hope for change. And I think this World Cup has been a push in the right step as well. And, you know, I think if England could win the World Cup, that would be a massive step for the game. It wouldn't solve all the problems. I think people think that every Super League game will be sold out next year if England won a keen themselves, but it would be a massive, you know, boost across all levels. But then the flip side of that is if they don't, it shouldn't be the be all and end all. There has to be change as well, and not just in Super League, but you know, schools getting more involved, amateur clubs. There needs to be a shake up across the whole board.
It has been great to see the various countries involved in this competition engaging with the local communities they're in. I think the Gillaroos have been out in schools all the time, and they're obviously the best team in the world at what they do. Get more people, get more eyes on the sport. And certainly the viewing figures have been fairly positive.
I think the community engagement, I know I went to a Greek training out at Sheffield Hallam, and they'd been out into some schools and in the area, and I think every nation's done the same, every team's done the same. There's been a lot of community involvement, and that's been great. I think with Greece and Sheffield, obviously you saw the crowd at Bramall Lane. I mean, they were there to see England, but also the Greeks really got involved in the city, and that's fantastic. I think the big step now is December and having a calendar, obviously. So we need to know. I want to talk always about calendars, but I did an interview with Troy Grant 2 weeks ago, and December is supposed to be when there's a lot of reasons why the calendar's been delayed. You can't just sort of, oh, we want a game here. You have to actually make them pay. You have to make them work. But a calendar for the next 10 years, or even for the next to the next World Cup, just to sort of sell the next round of fixtures on the back of the current ones would be huge.
I've had a long question from Michael. He says, would rugby league in the Northern Hemisphere be better served by hosting between World Cups, Australia and New Zealand alternative with another guest Southern Hemisphere team on a rotational basis with fixtures against the home nations and friends? The non-touring Southern Hemisphere teams can play against each other in the Southern Hemisphere. This avoids the huge two-year gap of top-level international rugby league in the Northern Hemisphere that happened after Rugby League World Cup 2013, whilst maintaining top-level international rugby league in the Southern Hemisphere post-season. The Northern Hemisphere teams aren't of sufficient enough quality to draw crowds in Australia and New Zealand, barring England, but England needs to have top quality international rugby league to build a non-Heartland fan base to retain new sponsors who get on board at World Cups, then fall away due to lack of content in the years thereafter. Oh, Michael set it up. You know what, on the back of that and mentioning crowds and such, shouldn't we be disappointed that in Hull, they've had two games and not great attendances in what we're told is a great rugby league city. Yet Middlesbrough turned out in decent numbers for two teams who really they should have known nothing about in Tonga and Cook Islands, really.
I think the sort of more relating to Michael's point, the one thing we do know is that there is guaranteed profit out of this World Cup, that it's a cost neutral tournament. They need to cover all of those, but the fee that is being paid to the IRL is already fixed. So they know that whatever the amount of money out of the coffers, it's guaranteed. It might be 5 million quid, it could be we don't know what we're talking about because it's rugby league, we don't actually know the amount, but we know it's there. If it was me and I was in Troy Grant's shoes giving you the interview saying it's difficult to put a calendar together, we need to get all the ducks in the right row, I would be announcing now what you're doing with that money. So as each nation went home, you'd be saying there is a proportion of this profit that's been made into the development in that nation. So Jamaica, for example, want a pitch. Now, if they get nothing else out of this World Cup, they need some land back on the island, which they can brand up with Jamaican Rugby League. Well, if that costs, let's say, £200,000, I don't know what the price of land is in Jamaica.
I imagine it'd be a lot.
But you know, your participation, what you brought to the sport, the fact that you now deserve a legacy project on the back of it, £200,000 from the World Cup profit is going to Jamaica to be spent on a facility whereby you can guarantee more kids will be playing on that ground 7 days a week, purely rugby league. You don't have to get off at 6 o'clock because hockey are using it. If it's the Greeks and they're trying to promote their domestic competition and they need to go to the government and get a match-funded bid to create their domestic competition, well, you've got £100,000 out of the World Cup. You can now go to the government, make that £200,000, and if that pays travel expenses because roads have got to fly to Athens or whatever it might be, or you want to create a junior competition in schools, that money's earmarked. It has to be for something. We're not just giving it to you to buy ouzo in the bars. And you could do that with virtually every nation. Again, going back to the American wheelchair team, that 11 of the 12 are from America. They've been joined by one guy who plays for Wigan, who's of American heritage. Those 11 people all live in different places. They are being tasked to go back and set up a team where they live, to go to disabled people that they know, to the service people that they know, because a lot of them have come through the veterans of the army. Now, again, if you were to say to them, you're going with £100,000 to from the profit of the World Cup that you've helped generate to set up that competition. That, you know, and if it means that, you know, it, Ireland, for example, which certainly you know a lot about developing rugby league in Ireland, if that Ireland team could be kept together and play an England team in a mid-season international, that is a saleable commodity. I think you'd get, if you played that in Dublin, you would get a stadium of maybe 15, 20,000, half or possibly totally full, because that England-Ireland brand means something. And you know, if you've got, you know, the Richie Miles, you can get Luke Keary over if he isn't selected for Origin in that window. And you could play a full-strength England team that may or may not have made a World Cup final, possibly even won it. And you can get a television deal for that because it's not part of a current existing arrangement. And it costs £50,000 to stage that game or cover the cost of that game. Part of the World Cup profit should be used for that. So I just think we need to be cleverer. We now will have some money, which we've never had before. How are we going to spend it?
I think that's the key issue, that the international game has to wash its own hands. Mm-hmm. Because in the past, it hasn't. The club game is what produces, what brings in the TV, what pays the players. Clubs have been reluctant, or some clubs, have been reluctant to release players because they don't know, is Luke Geary going to be insured? If he does his ACL and misses the Roosters, are the Roosters going to be compensated? So that, not to be an IRL apologist, but that's one of the considerations that the discussions has been, that they know, okay, Luke Geary has a calf issue, he's been checked, he's got the best medical care, the Roosters are happy. That sort of situation, which hasn't really happened in the past, and we've had fixtures for the sake of fixtures, so we need to know what is going to make money. You know, having Greece play Lebanon in Bay would be great, but who pays for most of the Lebanese team to fly out? Who puts them up? You know, you can't expect them to play for, you know, players shouldn't pay for nothing. You know, we're past that stage, and Franny knows more about what players have to go through to get themselves fit and on the field. But yeah, I think that's a big part of it. But we do have games that sell. I mean, you look at Tonga Samoa, you know, you look at England PG, England Samoa, you know, a lot of those games, people will pay to watch them because they're fantastic spectacles. So we do need to organise where, have them in the right venues. And as you said about Middlesbrough, I think there was 12,000 in Coventry for Australia-Scotland. I mean, that was a better turn-up than Huddersfield and Hull, which are rugby league places. So maybe we should be going away from the heartlands more because they're saturated markets.
Well, so we have a international series next year against whoever. Well, are we just going to go back to Ellen Road, the KC, or whatever, MKM Stadium, is it called now? And wherever. Or do we try it? Do we be brave and... Do we just try and appeal to the same... I mean, this wouldn't be the criticism of this World Cup. We're trying to sell all these games to the same people. We've got four games in Warrington, whatever, and three games in Doncaster. But if we say we're going to play the first test in Newcastle, second test in Coventry, third test in London... Now, it's going to be a lot of travelling for rugby league. People want to see everything, but you don't have to see everything. It's going to be on telly as well.
Well, I think you need to look at a few things. You know, obviously, it's got to earn some money, and it's got, you know, it can't be where the game loses money. But there seems to, there needs to be something put in behind all these things. So, you know, the magic at Newcastle for the last few years, great. Well, let's have some kind of legacy built into that. So, whether that's kids going and tickets and coaching before it, bring them to the gate. We've got to start to build this momentum, and it feeds into this other, the bigger thing, that we're just dropping things in into a you know, because people think, or we think, or everyone else, they know what rugby league is. Well, they might do. They might not know the rules. They've heard of it. They might have seen it, but there's not that many people. When you go in the next town or a football town, they never don't. About rugby league, and that's just here in the north of England, never mind anywhere else. We need to have that all joined in, where it can't be just dropped in and going, look at this, it's great. And it is, and there will be people, odd people will go, we've just got to build in, we've got to get a bit more professional how we do it. You know, the way, and it might be, you have to give thousands of tickets away to kids at first, and that's how you do it. And we've been doing it for years for the international game, but now it's in this. That's why we've got to be a bit more serious about it, a bit more planned, where hopefully there's a bit of money to have people who are paid to get people into this and get them into having a go, coming to watch. And that's that version I play. It's nothing like it, but it's get them into it. I'm a rugby league player.
Those kids at Brazil, the Brazil game seem to enjoy it. They're making so much noise.
Yeah, just because I think with that, I think we can look at it a slightly different way as well to get people interested is make stars out of the players. We don't sell the players, we don't market the players. You go back to, I suppose, even as far back as the 90s, it's the last time that you had recognisable players for people that aren't rugby league people. You know, so your Martin Fires and your Yellow Ramblers and people like that, they're probably the last household names, really, that people can name that aren't rugby league followers. You know, so we need to market the players now. We need to get them out there in the public domain and get them on TV shows and get them doing different stuff and get them out there so people know who they are. Dom Young's a prime example now. You know, it could be an absolute superstar. It could be an absolute superstar. And while he's doing what he's doing now, and doing what he's doing over in the NRL, get him out there, flood him on TV. I mean, I'm not a massive fan of reality TV, but Jacques O'Neill, that went into whatever he went into last year, you know, there's a lot of people that know him purely and simply because he went on to whatever programme he went on.
I'm trying not to say Love Island because then I know what it was.
A lot of that comes down to access, though, and while the access in rugby league is generally better than most other sports, it's not as good as a Cooper. I mean, you look at the Samoan example, the coach banned his players from talking to me after the game. I mean, that was one of the games of this year, if not for, you know, like England, for example, I think they only do two media ops a week between games. Is that enough? I don't think it is, but you know, if you only just get your same media that already covers the game and you're not branching out to national media, you rarely do, then you're not spreading that message.
I can understand it when a tournament's going on, because obviously you don't want them going off doing TV programmes while there's a tournament going on.
Yeah.
But outside of the tournament, you know, there's 365 days a year where you can get out there and market the players, and the players can go out there and market the sport. And I think we do need to take a little bit of a step outside the box, and I've wrote about it in the column where the Magic, I'm not a massive fan of Magic Weekend. I think we've saturated the market of Magic Weekend now. People have been and they've done it, and some will go year in, year out, some aren't that bothered anymore because they've been. So we need to do something different, and I think the way to attract people's attention now, nobody wants to sit and watch an 80-minute game. And I think that's why Magic doesn't work, because nobody wants to sit and watch four 80-minute games or three 80-minute games in one day. Our society is now, I call it the microwave society. People want to put it in the microwave for 2 minutes and it's done. So we need to have something that's fast, that's attractive, it catches people's attention. And I've joked about it. I came up with an idea while I sat on the toilet. You know, I'm sure people can think about it a little bit more deeply than what I did. But I just said, like, League One club, Championship club, Super League club. You know, a six-a-side competition. You can bring in different rules, so it's not the version of rugby league that we all know. It can be a different version of rugby league. It might be less tackles. It might be. If a player knocks on, you've got to lose a player, so you improve the score, whatever it might be. But each team is made up of nine players, three from a League One club, three from a Championship club, three from a Super League club. There's got to be two players from each club on the field at one time, so you're not having all the Super League players and Championship players on. So each club is represented. The 100 now, where you make up different teams. And we can market it to a different audience, as a different TV deal, different TV audience, different sponsors potentially. And the games are short, they're sharp, and whatever you want to do with it. And that's just an idea off the top of my head. But we need to do something different to what we're doing now and what we've done for the last 25, 30 years. Because what we've done only worked to a certain extent, to a certain market. And we've got to look further afield now and try to attract people to look at it in a different way.
I think just on that access issue, though, that happens all year round. Mm. I mean, some of the best young English players in Super League are just unavailable for interview, basically, first 2 years in first grade. And even, you know, I've chatted to the father of one of them, and they're quite happy for them to do an interview. It's not a case of the media doing it open, but the clubs want to keep them quite, because they know if they do really well and they're a star, the NRL will come and get them, or they'll go to rugby union, and they'll have more money that they can afford to keep them. So I think that's part of the IMG remit, is to change that kind of the way that the media managers operate and the way that clubs promote themselves. But just on what you said there, I think Nines is the opportunity there. I think IMG are looking at that. I was at the I'm trying to remember, it was 2019 World Cup. We had a World Cup Nines quickly and gone. But it was actually a great event. You know, it was men and women. There was a lot of countries. And I think you can have a League One club against a Super League club in Nines or Championship, because it's not going to be a blowout. Obviously, if we don't have six again, it's not going to be a ridiculous blowout, because it's a small format and you can introduce special rules. You can have former players, you know, you could get what they did in the NRL Nines, you know, had Brad Fittler come and play for the Roosters. You could get Kevin Simcoe, could easily play. you know, he's the fittest man alive. You could get him coming, you know, I think there's different ways, and that would bring in different audience, I think.
I think the other thing about making heroes of people, which you're absolutely right, is something that we need to do, is that we don't now have to rely on just Dom Young. When people are talking about Amy Hardcastle, they're talking about Jack Brown, you know, they're talking about Nathan Collins. We've got a whole raft of, the gift of this three World Cups together, four if you include the PDRL, and some brilliant stories in PDRL. You've got so many more people that are marketable. It's having the strategy now to get them out there, talking about their sport, their backstory. They're amazing. And we have now got that resource. In the past, we might not have done, but it's hard to keep a lid on something now if it's spreading. We just need to let it go.
And it's how do we get those stories in the papers, Ian? How do we get these new superstars across? Because as Craig rightly says, TV companies go looking for a rugby league person to interview, they're probably going to get Martin O'Fire again.
We do need to make more of Dom Young, otherwise he'll go to rugby union and we've lost him for good. It's difficult to get into newspapers now. There are less and less inclined to promote rugby league. It needs some strong leadership from the RFL, which we haven't got, or IMG could take the lead. But it's a really, it's banging your head against a big wall at times. There's a lot of bias goes on in national newspapers against rugby league. The Daily Mail just hate rugby league. I know they make exceptions from time to time, but it's tough. It's breaking down barriers. Those barriers are getting a little bit higher at the moment.
Rugby league and foreigners.
Well, it's a numbers game as well in most things, isn't it? So if you've got the numbers and you've got more people, if you look at rugby league and you look at, I don't know how many participation and professional, it's tiny. So if it gets bigger, then people have to, because that's what they want. They want the numbers, they want access to people, they want, and that's the thing of what this is all about, is trying to make it bigger and make people more identify with the game and go, oh yeah, that's what I do, or that's what I've seen, or I love that and this. It's about trying to make it take off, because like you said, it's too many people kept the game small to suit them or suit their club, and that's the trouble. The clubs have got, there's no war chest for the RFL. I hope IMG have the war chest to go, right, this is the money, so right, there you go, but because you're doing this now and that's great, right, you're not having that. Because you're not just having your hand out. That's it. Because they're voting. That's the trouble with probably democracy. And in this instance, if I've got a vote and I'm going to stick my hand up, that means what? You're going to take the money away from me. And I'm not really giving much back, but I'm not voting for that. Well, at the moment, no one can say, probably Maurice Lindsay, the last person who had that say, this is what's happening. But now it has to all be voted in. Nothing gets done.
We've got a unique platform because we can talk about whatever we want in the world of rugby league, and whether that's women, wheelchair or men. But you've got a different thing, John, because, and Ian as well, you can't just decide, right, I'm going to write about women's rugby league, because you've got to write about what people want to hear about.
Well, Ian's retiring, so he can.
I'm battling against PA. It's all football dominated. It's not 90% football, and and all the rest you've got to sort of scrap your way. But interestingly, last week we suddenly took an interest in wheelchair rugby league. So we did separate sidebars and features and Q&As on what is the game and how do people get involved. So that, you know, that was a bit of a breakthrough, something different rather than running the mill rugby league.
I think the, just to build on that, the sports desks do notice things that are trending or that are people talking about. Like, I know the story of Greece and how they got to the World Cup. That was a case with the eye that I contributed. They came to me and said, we want a story on Greece. Usually it's me pitching, you know, I've got a story on this person or that player. They came to me and they wanted a story, and it was a full page, you know, on a Saturday edition. I think over 1,000 words, which is, you know, almost unheard of. But they do take notice, and I think internationals, whether it be wheelchair, women's, men's, they definitely have more cut through than, you know, a Salford story or a Castleford story. That's just the way it is.
I think that's where we need to go as well. Let's find the easy wins. You know, so people want to hear a story about Greece and why why has rugby league been banned in Greece for so long? You know, people want the easy ones. Now, I touched on it early on, is that, you know, us getting new supporters at Batley or increasing the participation in men's rugby at Batley is going to be minimal. But can we increase the participation in women's rugby league? Definitely. And you could probably promote them numbers. You could probably increase it by 1,000%. Just be a little bit of work. You can't increase men's rugby by 1,000%. Same with wheelchair rugby. You could probably increase that tenfold. You can't do that with men's game. So I think as a sport, we need to look at the easy wins now to raise the profile of the sporting umbrella, not just rugby as a men's game, but rugby league as a collective of everything that falls under that, the men's, women's, wheelchair, PDRL. And we need to look at, take the men's out of it now and look at the other three. And how can we grow them games to a different audience that then might contribute to, well, yeah, well, Dewsbury have got a wheelchair team now, so I'll go and watch Dewsbury on Sunday. Or Dewsbury have got a PDRL team now, so we're going to get involved on Sunday. So that you can grow your market a little bit. And hopefully if we do that, then we're attracting those different type of investors, different type of sponsors that we've not got now. And it might then raise the profile of the sport as an umbrella as a whole in the media, rather than it just being... Nobody wants to read about Salford, nobody wants to read about Batley, nobody wants to read about Wakefield.
We can use the example of like Michael Checker. I mean, there was a lot of stories about Michael Checker. Not only is he a great speaker, he's very articulate, but he's known because he's a rugby union coach. Mm-hmm. But that gets, because it's a cross-sport story, the Nationals are more likely to buy into that, and there's a lot of examples of that across the room.
I think the other thing that Sheffield are a very similar club in terms of size to what you are, and they're going through again a process of almost reinventing themselves with their new ground. They have taken it upon themselves through their foundation, which is proactive, to get a wheelchair team. The last I heard when I spoke to somebody down there, and I think Andrea Dobson's involved in being their full-time employee, they've now got 40 people turning up to train on a night. They're not going to be a wheelchair super league team, but people are coming to them saying, I've seen it, I want to try it, have you got any chairs that I can just even get in and see what it's like? Well, from 40 people trying it, suddenly then 3, 4, 5 years down the line, South Yorkshire has a Super League club in wheelchair. That then gets people in through the new stadium that they've got to watch their team on a Sunday that's wearing the same colours. So I think the big plus of this World Cup has been people have seen it isn't just men running around. And England performing as they have is fantastic, because there is a payoff if England make the World Cup final, if they win it. But the bigger one for the sport is wheelchair trending fourth the other night. That's massive.
It's obviously if we told people before it's going to be great. But
it's a perfect television sport though, isn't it? It's like snooker. All of the action is encapsulated in your screen.
There's nothing that you can't
see going on extra. You don't need any great knowledge. All you need to do is sit there and be entertained by people smashing the hell out of each other. But the huge amount of skill. You don't need to have ever gotten a chair to realise that somebody who's flicking a ball out the back, to someone who's come on an arcing run on the blind side, whilst also manoeuvring their wheelchair as it's being thrown over, is something that you just need to sit there and hold your hands up and go, I just want to see more of this.
And unlike snooker, you can't be drunk playing it.
You probably could, it wouldn't do you
anything. Yeah, I think it'd be... Yeah,
it wouldn't enhance your game.
No.
You might have to do for some of them collisions.
I just say the speed that they get up and back. Yeah. I mean, it'd be two tackles and I'd be, you know, sub. Yeah, it's crazy how fit they are.
And they ran over the referee's foot, which was...
Each other's hands and they just go and go, yeah.
Goal post fall over, that's...
There's lots of wow moments in there. Yeah. It's wow. Wow.
But also, when you hear people like Freya Levy, who's been, I think, one of the best pundits that we've had, when you have James Simpson, who's the ambassador of the wheelchair game, these are all people that, even if you don't know them, you want to listen to them. You want to hear their stories. You want to know why is it, you know, that they're prepared to throw themselves out of a chair. And then James will come back to you and say, well, why do you think I'm in a chair in the first place? And it's just a brilliant line. And
I think it's the same too with the women's game. I mean, anyone who's watching any of the games, we were there at Wigan. I mean, they weren't calling head-eye tackles for some reason, but the physicality that's involved is just as big as in the men's game. Yeah. They literally beat the living snot out of each other.
Young girls now are extreme of the extreme. Yeah. So this is an extreme sport. It's crazy. Like I said, you run into them as hard as you can. Now, as society, we're looking at the fairer sex. Oh, I'm not sure you should. There's no tradition in it. These who have put their hand up now are trailblazers. I coached a lot of them when they were really young. And I'm having to say, no, steady, steady, because it just... But they're doing it with no real tradition. They're the ones who are going, I'm doing this. Fantastic.
I'm just going to think about even my household yesterday. I was sat watching the wheelchair game that were on yesterday. My wife hates rugby, she doesn't watch rugby. She sat down and watched it. My young one who had his shower and he come down, who normally watches something on Netflix before he goes to bed, he sat and watched it. So the two people there that aren't interested in rugby, I don't watch rugby, but sat down and watched the wheelchair game and they engrossed it for half an hour.
I did see someone describe it as human robot wars, which I thought was quite an amusing description. It's just ridiculous.
I think that's the power to have TV, of mainstream TV coverage. I mean, I was watching the Tonga game on Sunday with my daughter, and she was transfixed by the war dances and was going for Tonga and was crying when Tonga lost at the end. There's no allegiance to Tonga. Yeah, she's got allegiance to England and Australia, but you know, that she wanted to go to a game. She wants to go to the women's game this week. I mean, that is the power of, you know, those kind of moments.
That's going to be a physical game tomorrow, Papua New Guinea and England.
About Australia, New Zealand, the day after.
No, back-to-back Australia, New Zealand games. It's been mentioned, but the power of being on the BBC. I mean, not that I actively seek out what's going on in rugby union, but I didn't realise England were playing this weekend because it's on Amazon. And even though I've got access to it,
I was the same. I mean, I would usually watch, you know, I follow rugby union, and I only really knew because Michael checked it. It was talked about that much, and I think I don't have Amazon, so when something is behind, I mean, it'll make money for the RFU, it'll make money, which, you know, they'll spend on development, everything else. But you would think home internationals is. It's an interesting strategy, and I think cricket's had the same thing. There's been some blowback about that. You've got to find the right balance, and that's obviously Super League has the same thing. It is behind the paywall, so a lot of people don't. I know so many rugby league fans who don't have Sky, so they don't. They're rugby league fans, but they don't watch, you know, rugby league on TV.
That's all the people on the internet. They all watch rugby league, but they don't like rugby league.
Yeah, and that's why I think Channel 4 has obviously been really big, but. We need to build on that, and we need to have more of that. And obviously, we need them to be paying us money because you know we can't just give away the product for free.
I had an uncle who is no longer with us, but he lived down in Bristol. He's from Wakefield originally, so he's from Rugby League Heartland, but he lived in Bristol for 20 or 30 years. And we used to go down and see him every couple of years at least. And I was just talking to him once, and he was saying, "Oh, I watch Rugby League, but why is it only ever played in sort of March to May, because he'd only ever seen it, the Challenge Cup on BBC. He didn't realise it was the Super League that was played on Sky, because he ain't got Sky. But Rugby Union can afford to have their games locked away somewhere, because they don't need that money from they get the money from the crowds, don't they? Rugby League can't afford not to be on terrestrial TV. And the point about Channel 4 is a valid one as well, because at least it's on terrestrial TV. And BBC is the cream. That's why this World Cup is so valuable for rugby league, and it's an opportunity that they shouldn't be able to miss.
I think that's one thing we can learn from rugby union game, is how successful they are with marketing the international game. You know, they can get 80,000 people, whatever twick in the malls, they get 80,000 there regardless of who they play. Yeah. And it's the same with Wales and Ireland.
It's an occasion.
They'll fill the stadiums. And I think the club rugby is not that successful. No. You can see with the amount of debt that the rugby clubs are in. It's not that successful, but the market, the international game, a thousand times better than what we do.
But they have a calendar, whereas at the moment, when is England's next game?
Mm.
So England win the World Cup and we don't know who they're playing until maybe a month after the tournament's finished. Yeah. So I think we do have a saleable product. I just don't think we've ever put it above the club game, and that's what I'm hoping IMG will do, that they've already enshrined the mid-season window. In the Northern Hemisphere, you know, and a lot of that will be England, France, which in some respects is great, because I think France are starting to come up a little bit. The more that they play, the better that they'll get. And again, if you can plan that weekend as a wheelchair game with some genuine rivalry, change the rules before we play them, that'd be great. a women's game, because again, their women are starting to play in our Super League. We're getting to know them better, the standards going up, and a men's game. You put all that on in, say, Perpignan over a weekend, you're going to get people going. You're going to get television companies interested. You're going to put the international game above the club game. And if that comes out of this World Cup, that would be a huge legacy. The problem is that you quite rightly, John Keir has said after the end of this one, what's happening with Northern Hemisphere Rugby League. I checked up his quotes after 2017, when Wales didn't win a game, went through exactly the same process.
They got and he said, beaten, but a lot more heavily, 2 and 2 and 7.
What's happening with Northern Hemisphere Rugby League? So 5 years down the line, nothing's changed.
Well, Kyle Evans is now the best player in the world. So that's, he's not
playing for Batley next year.
are you picking anyone up off the back of the World Cup? Is there scope for that? Obviously not.
My recruitment's really easy. When you've got no money to spend, you can't recruit anybody. So you don't waste any time going out speaking to people.
Your Honour, not thinking about rebranding. What's his favourite animal? I'm not sure. I've got flamingos.
I think leopards are taken.
Yeah, that's, yeah. I'll take one off a feather than that one.
I'll have to talk about rebranding in York, because obviously they've got their new exciting badges when we're there on Thursday, ahead of those women's final games in Group B. France, Cook Islands. Oh, Cook Islands. Their number three is my favourite player. She's awesome. She just smashes people, takes the kicks, does everything. Get her in a Wakefield, but yeah, I don't think we've got any salary cap in the Women's Super League.
There is one championship club that's certainly looking at two of the Papua New Guineans.
I was going to say, oh, the country is, but it's not the one I'm thinking of, because they're in Super League. Is it one who were the favourites to win the championship?
Not a million miles away from here. And if they can do it, I'm sure, but he can pick somebody up.
Hopefully they're looking at them before the quarterfinal. Afterwards.
I think you'll find a lot of the players that are in the World Cup will stay on. There'll be quite a few Lebanon players from rumours around rugby league, which don't tend to be too far away. Whitehaven always recruit PNG players, so I'd imagine they'll have a couple on their radar as well. And I would imagine they'll be London will be after a few as well.
But it would be great, wouldn't it, if as part of this World Cup, even a scholarship was offered to a young Greek player. It didn't count on any salary cap. You could bring them into your reserve system if they're of an age where they couldn't play academy anymore. That you're actually encouraged to do that. So again, you know, IMG, whoever it is, needs to look at. They're very good at the moment telling French teams they've got to play a certain number of French players next year. Well, I think we should be telling all Super League clubs, and if Championship clubs want to come in as well, that would be fantastic. You've also got to have some kind of a development pathway for emerging nations. So, you know, there might be a young Serbian that, you know, you should be given a dispensation to take into your club, even if it's only for an 8-week window, just to see what they're like. Give them some tips that they can go back to Red Star or wherever it might be to make them a better club. But it shouldn't cost you anything to do that.
Less 40-year-olds coming over. I don't know why I looked at John then.
I was 32 when I came over.
The thing about the Australians, especially at Super League now, is there's average players on $200,000 a year, whereas they're not great players, but they're in a system where there could be someone on $1 million a year, whereas we just can't afford them. No, should we really? I think gone are the days when we got the stars and people would rock up and go box office, I'm going to go watch him. The closest we get to is probably his World Cup challenge, I think. Going back to Jonathan Thurston, heading the way he's ended there, thinking, star, outstanding. They're the things that I remember as being as a kid, you know, what seeing Mal Meninga or whatever it was. We can't afford those sort of players, so don't pay those sort of players that sort of money if they're not worth it.
I think that just highlights, and I know it's not to do with you, but Kevin Proctor, the Wakefield, you know, player who was sacked for vaping at halftime, well past his best. Obviously, he had a great career, played for New Zealand, played for the Storm, but he's on the downward spiral. But I think that just goes to show where some of the Super League clubs are totally fishing.
Went well when we signed Kevin Locke, so we've got a good record with Kevin.
I mean, I'd rather see, you know, a Jai Field or a Bevan French, you know, a young player who's, you know, maybe had 20 NRL games. Obviously, it's quite hard because they've got to play a certain amount of games to get a visa, but they've added a lot to the competition. Oh, yeah. As opposed to a 33-year-old who isn't really that bothered.
I think there's plenty of players in the championship as well that could quite easily step up that cost them a fraction of the price. Mm-hmm. I know he's passed his sell-by date now in terms of a Super League player, but someone like Dave Manning, who's absolutely ripped the Championship up for the last 10, 12 years, who, for me, it would have been an absolute steal for anybody, even a 28, 29-year-old, to have 2, 3, 4 years in Super League and cost him next to nothing, and he'd have been 100% every single week. And his performance does not change week in, week out. Everyone's good to go out every single week. And there's plenty of players like that in the Championship. But I think it's too much of an easy win now. And I suppose as owners and coaches, people want to get supporters through the gate. So
that's a big part of it.
Is Dave Manning going to attract people to come to...
I get fans asking me, who are we signing? You know, which... It's like, it's not always about the other room.
I think we think of it as the sign them to bring them through the gate. Dave Manning should never have left Leeds.
No.
They thought they sent him to a month loan to Featherstone and realised they sent him for a year. He'd have played in that Challenge Cup final. He was well in front of Chris Clarkson, people like that. And that can happen. Mm. But my concern is, you'll bring a Proctor in, and we're talking about him now, but it could be anybody else. Because it appeases the social media for a little while and gets them through the season.
Isn't that important that we perhaps move away from traditional promotion and relegation? Because then somebody like Luke Hooley that Leeds might be taking a chance to have a look at without that pressure necessarily. And it's not just Leeds, any club without Salford, you know, could go into the Championship, get a couple of players in the knowledge that if they've got a good Category B licence and that they're going to be in Super League for the following year, they can try players out. Because that's the other thing that I think is quite exciting about the AMG proposals, that, as Ian quite rightly points out, we don't have sufficient detail on yet. But one of the things it might do is give clubs the chance to grow and young talent the chance to emerge. And if that's the cost of that is we don't have traditional promotion relegation anymore, I think that's a price worth paying.
Well, that's a big... We talked about Dom Young before, and I remember... I think it was the Greece game where he scored 4. It might have been the game before. And I said, tweeted he couldn't get a game at Huddersfield. I got quite a bit of stick for that. But I think he played, two Super League games. And then he went to we'd signed for the Knights mid-season. He went to Newcastle, I think round 4, and he played nearly every game. Now, you guys are coaches. You can't tell me in a 3-month pre-season that he went from not good enough to play for Huddersfield, who are on the bottom rung of Super League, to being good enough to play in the NRL week in, week out. And you look how good he is now, or 2 years later. So who's identifying, and is it a case of, well, we have to win because we're going to get relegated? So, I mean, you've got Jermaine McGilvery, who's proven, and we've got another winger who's a bit more older, but that, you know, he's a once-in-a-generation talent. You would say he's an athlete, you know, whether he's the most skillful rugby player, but he's a machine.
There's been things along the line, and I don't have to mention names, but there's been players who've raided the academy budget to sign a steady player, and they've stopped half the budget of the academy. I wrote witness, they had an academy, and they're competing with Salford and whoever were at the bottom. Well, they didn't have an academy, and the 100 grand they were spending might have got them a couple of players, and may have got them out of it, because that's where they were. But it just contradicts everything in what you're doing. You're trying to bring players through, and you're trying to do the right thing, but yet you can drop out, it can all end. It just doesn't make any sense.
You mentioned witness, and I talked to Phil about this before the grand final, Jared O'Connor. He went to administration, Gary Etherington comes in and says, I'll have those two players, Sam Walters, and they're playing in the grand final not long ago. But witness are producing players, but has that helped them? No, it hasn't, because they're in the Championship and they're not going to be in Super League anytime soon unless, you know, Jeff Bezos takes them over.
They couldn't fund it. Yeah. There's other clubs that are close to it that can't fund it, and that's where they're just stuck.
I think going back to what you said about promotion and relegation, I think the sport is actually leading itself that way for a number of years now. So we've effectively finished second last year in the Championship. We're going to get less than £130,000 in distribution money. Super League clubs getting 1.5, 1.6 million. So how can any club cope with that disparity of money there without a Derek Beaumont coming in? And that's the other thing for me is that what Derek's done for Leeds is absolutely fantastic. How many Super League clubs would be able to cope financially if their owner, their benefactor pulled out? Are their business models successful enough to manage their owner pulling that money out?
But then you need to be given the incentive to get reward for being the second best club that isn't necessarily financial. It is having the 1895 Cup at Wembley. Mm. What a day it would be for the town of Batley if you could take your team to Wembley. It needs a championship final. A championship final that might have, say, £100,000 cash prize attached to it, that the players get half of the pot. All of that we've sort of sacrificed on this altar of it's promotion or nothing. Why can't you have things to play for that mean everything to you? And then you then start again to defend the prizes that you won.
Well, I think you'd make the sport as a whole more competitive if that disparity in central funding were reduced. So like we have Super League and League One that get a set amount of money, and then in Championship you're rewarded for basically where you finish in the league. So for me, it would be, I'd reduce it to, it's 20 million now distribution money. So Super League get 93% of the distribution money, Championship and League One clubs get 7%. So the disparity in money that Super League clubs get compared to Championship and League One clubs is ridiculous. So why can't we reduce it so all Super League clubs get £800,000 or whatever it might be, and all Championship clubs get £450,000, and then all League One clubs get that amount of money. So the pot of money is spread out, Super League clubs aren't reliant on the £1.6 million they're getting. So then your business model has to be a lot better to generate more income yourself.
I think there's two things. The distribution, which is crazy that it's dependent on where you finish, because that's just going to encourage an unfair advantage, and also the quotas.
Yeah.
So Lee have just had a 14. Team. What is the point of that? Mm. Like, how is that good for the English game if you're Blake Ferguson, it's the last payday?
Yeah.
And also, it's not fair, you know, for the likes of your team and other teams, and then they'll have to get rid of those players to get in the Super League anyway because there's a quota.
When did it come in? When did it?
I think it's last year or two.
Was it an announcement? Or it just seems to be just.
Yeah, and it wasn't announced, I don't think. Yeah.
It might have done affect half the teams anyway. If it does, if you're playing,
if you're Featherstone or Lee,
I just couldn't believe it when it happened. I just thought, what are we doing? You know, as you go down, there should be less and less.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Exactly.
They're going to kick us out soon. So. Ian, you're retiring. Rob Hicks said he was going to retire from full-time management. He's never off the telly these days. Are you actually retiring? And what are you going to miss most about covering rugby league?
I'm finishing as a PA rugby league correspondent, so technically I'm retiring. But I've been involved with the game for 40-odd years, and it'd be hard to give it up completely. So I'm hoping to keep my hand in by doing a few matches, probably for PA, just to keep meeting people and doing what I've been doing a little bit on a smaller scale, so you probably still see me a little bit when I was watching.
What do you get for being on the Roll of Honour? Because we were asking about this, we're wondering, do you get any kind of special badge?
I'll tell you tomorrow. I don't know, there is something. I've no idea.
Don't you get a special dinner with Ralph Rimmer? Just you and him?
we're getting a lunch tomorrow.
All right.
I've no idea what I'll receive, but it'll be well received.
Be able to drive your sheep through the heavy woods during your retirement at your heart.
The Battle of Batley.
Yeah, I think you're just hanging out for another trip to Toulouse next year, aren't you?
Oh, I'll be going anyway. I'll go and Batley play there.
I think Craig's found a new media manager tonight.
Yeah. I would have offered to be a media manager if he'd got promotion. I'd be doing it free.
Any questions, audience? Speak now for all your piece.
My disappointment with the World Cup, I mean the games have been fantastic and the wheelchair rugby set has been phenomenal. And my wife watches some rugby, but it's so keen. We're going on Thursday to Sheffield and we've just bought the tickets for the final. And it's fantastic that BBC have shown all these games. But we need to have a game that people want to go there, regardless of whether the team will believe it. And you see the TV screen, like at Huddersfield or Australia, there weren't many people there. And people who were not rugby league people would say, well, what is this game all about? You know, they're blowing it up, it's the World Cup, it's the best that we've had. And yet nobody's going to watch it. And it seems to diminish, in my opinion, the effect of the World Cup itself. The legacy is, as you've said,
I think there's two points there that are really interesting. One is there was a decent crowd at Huddersfield, but they were all in the wrong place. I think because they'd sold the tickets for the upper tier of the stand behind the post, there were a lot of people there. Where if they'd have moved them all down where they were in view of the cameras, you'd have said, oh, there's a great atmosphere here, a lot of people in. I think the other thing is that I don't know if anybody else has found, when we've been going round, this is a very different audience for the World Cup. Even yesterday in Sheffield, there were areas of kids that were clearly had done some work on Scotland or Wales, and they were carrying all the flags and they were singing all the chants. And when the Brazilians were there, you know, a samba band while they're playing. There were lots of young people at Newcastle for the opening game. We are attracting a new and different audience. It's what do we give them next to make them come back? I think once you go to your live game Thursday, we don't know what day it is. You'll want to know where the next game is. You'll want to go and see a wheelchair Super League game. But you'll want to get, when the Super League season starts, you'll want to go and see a game if it's near you.
I mean, there was one guy dived over.
Yeah. You can't do that.
He dives over with his...
You can't. You have to take the ball over into the in-goal area. You can't dive into it.
It's not like American football.
And they gave it a try.
You can only keep referees the ball.
You can't dive from the pitch into the in-goal area in wheelchair. You have to take the ball.
That's why it worked. The camera work at Sheffield was perfect because they were facing the... What's the family stand called? Is it John Street Stand? John Street Stand. So the stand you were on in the media was empty, wasn't it? We couldn't see that on telly. That was in the cop anyway. So
I think generally just don't hold games at Huddersfield.
Don't hold games.
I mean, they struggle. There's not a big audience for rugby league in Huddersfield.
It's a football town.
Yeah. It is a football town. They average 5,000 in the Super League. I think it was eight and a half. I mean, that's not a great crowd, but it's obviously more than you get for a Super League game.
We'd have held games at Wakefield, but you know, we'd knock the stand out. So what can you do? What can you do? It's got a greater building site on the telly next year.
That must have a calendar.
Well, we need to know when the next World Cup is after France.
I think I wrote a story on that.
Announce it.
2009.
Sorry? 2009. Yeah, I think New Zealand have expressed interest to host it, but they are aiming for a Pacific tournament, so games across the Pacific, not just in New Zealand. But I think there's a committee that's working on, they're hoping at the end of the year to make a decision. But yeah, that would be great, so we know. In 2029, you want to save for it.
Well,
you can
plan for it, can't
you? Yeah, well, I think the fact that France is only in 2025, and obviously from people from here, it's not hard to get to, and that would be... I mean, when was the last World Cup in France?
72.
There you go.
In its entirety. Yeah. I mean, there have been group games.
And they started the World Cup, didn't they, in 54, so I think that'll be a fantastic tournament.
It may be easier to get to France, but I'd rather go to Papua New Guinea and the Cook Islands. I still won't go. Still
won't go. You don't like to fly.
No, I just like to stay at home. If you can't have the World Cup in Wakefield, it'd be perfect, but we haven't got any stadiums. You know. Building sites. We've got a cast instead. Phil, the magazine's out this week.
In tomorrow. Be in the shops on Friday.
Friday. Craig, good luck with Batley.
Yep.
Ian, good luck with not retiring.
Thank you.
John, good luck with Patreon.
Thank you.
What am I wishing you good luck with?
Everything.
I don't want to talk about Wakefield.
Me neither.
And that's a perfect way to end. Thank you very much for coming.
Swearing.
I think the internet feed's gone down, so it's okay. We can say what we want. Yeah. Thank you very much for coming. It's always appreciated. And that's it. Thank you.
Sports Social Podcast Network. Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.